You're where it's at, folks, here at allthingstrek.com. I'm Bob.
And I'm Oren.
All right, so supposedly we're supposed to have our big windstorm today.
Today? Didn't we? I thought we already had that yesterday. It was really windy.
It wasn't that windy.
It was pretty windy.
I mean, there's a ferry near where I live that runs between Mukilteo and Clinton on Whidbey Island.
Yeah.
For those that want to look that up, I will mail you a pizza roll or cookie or something. I don't know.
Hey now, let's not steal memes.
And typically, when we have that windstorm every year, you see the ferry bounce in the water.
Yeah, okay.
And it's really awesome to see. I haven't seen that yet this year.
Oh, all right.
So, I mean, windstorm hasn't happened yet. And if it did happen, I am sorely disappointed.
Well, hopefully we won't lose power. I just know that I was driving home in hail yesterday.
It was hailing around here?
Yeah, it was.
That was awesome.
All right.
I didn't experience said hail, but I got a lot of rain.
But enough talking about the weather. I'm pleased to report that Star Trek game has continued excellent rate. We left out about halfway through a Klingon wedding. I brought in a guest player.
Road to Kalhaya and all.
Yeah, on the path to Kalhaya. We have a guest star playing the groom. The bride is a recurring NPC who the players will have had to deal with on occasion. Bob's character is currently stuck in an interesting situation.
I may or may not have slept with one of these Klingon women, and now they are both confronting me.
And if the Klingon honor being what it is, if you can't remember which one is which, they will be mad.
They will be mad.
Which, you know, will be fun for him.
Because I don't know if I'm actually going to have to fight other of them or anything, will I?
I don't know. I mean, I do know, but
I may or may not be gutted by two Klingon women.
I can't. They might stab you.
They may stab
you. They probably wouldn't do, like, a whole fight thing. Like, there's not really a ritual fight for this.
They'll just shank me there.
They'll
just
be mad, and they will make their displeasure known.
I don't want that to happen.
But, yeah, I'm pretty happy about this. Sadly, I don't think there's going to be a game next week, just because I'm going down to Olympia to watch horror movies all night at an old theater.
That is the all night long, right?
Yeah, all for
goodnight. I may or may not be going to that. I'm not sure yet.
Yeah, all for goodnight for anyone who lives in the Seattle Olympia area is down at the Olympia Historic Theater, I think it's called the Capitol Theater. Anyway, basically you get there.
Olympia is the capital.
Yeah, you get there at midnight. It's an old rundown theater, which is really creepy. And you get there at midnight and you watch horror movies until noon.
There's, like, costume contests and stuff, right?
Yes, there are contests and stuff. And it can be really fun sometimes. Other years I've gone, it's been boring. But it's something I used to do back, you know, in college, which was, I guess, 2 years ago now.
Is it, like, one of those things where it's like, there's, like, copious amounts of alcohol, or...?
Maybe. I don't really... I know that some people get drunk. I don't think they actually sell alcohol there. But I know that they aren't going to be, like...
Well, I'm cool with BYOB.
Yeah.
I'm cool with that. I can handle that.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Definitely want to bring your own.
Okay.
And then we're going to have to find somewhere to crash, because I'm not driving back after staying up until noon.
Well, I have a tent. For me.
Well, I'm crashing at my friend Grace's house, who's been on this show.
Oh, yeah. You have friends down there, don't you?
Well, I have a friend down there.
You have
there.
A friend. Well, there,
maybe more.
There's a said roof, though.
Yes. So we could ask her if there's room for you, too. But anyway, so today we are talking about Voyager and Voyager's let's get home plots.
Oh man, speaking of Voyager, I'm now halfway through season 6.
Why?
Of my Trek. Well, because we do a Star Trek podcast, I thought it'd be a good idea if I was familiar with all the Star Trek intimately as much as possible. That's why I started watching Voyager on Netflix. Now, I haven't seen all of Voyager, like, ever, because, you know, it's kind of painful to watch in a lot of respects. So, I mean, that being said, I'm going to take one for the team and watch all of Voyager. All
right.
I'm halfway through season 6, so I'm in the home stretch.
I discovered an interesting piece of trivia. For a long time, because you know how Paris gets demoted down to ensign at one point?
Yes, he spends 30 days in the brig.
Yeah, I thought that was because of what happened in Alice, but it was actually what happened in the episode 30 Days, which I never actually saw, which was when, like, this water planet was, like, destroying their environment by, like, doing too much oxygen mining, and their government decided they weren't going to do anything about it, and Paris decided he was going to intervene and destroy the mining plant, and Voyager was like, nuh-uh, don't do that.
Don't do that. That's like terrorism, sort of.
Yeah, basically. It was kind of a silly thing to do, because it's like, what, they're going to rebuild it, all you will have done is damaged relationships.
Yeah, really.
It was pretty silly. But that was an interesting piece of trivia, because Tom Paris bounces up and down in rank, which is kind of funny.
Does he get promoted back to lieutenant?
Yep. Because he starts off as a junior grade lieutenant for some reason.
Right.
Then he gets busted down to ensign. Then he gets promoted back up to junior grade. And then he gets promoted to senior grade lieutenant eventually. And all the while, Harry Kim is still an ensign. and you know, Harry Kim, who never actually betrayed Starfleet and joined the Maquis and then went to a penal colony, doesn't have those things going for him, so I guess is a problem.
I don't know, he got a pretty thorough thrashing, though, by Janeway on, like, interspecies relations.
Yeah, he did. Dude, God, I don't remember the name of that episode, but that was, like, the episode where he had sex with an alien woman, and, like, then he got an STD that made him all glowy, and for some reason Janeway decided to, like, bring the hammer down on this poor guy.
Yeah.
For reasons that we will probably never understand.
Yeah.
And, like, you know,
well, it became a bigger issue because of this, what are they called? Not Vaudoir, I don't want to say Voth, but I think that might be it.
The beer can spaceship, I remember.
Yeah, it's a generational ship is what it is, and they're explorers.
Yeah.
And there was like a terrorist, quote-unquote terrorist plot
right.
to separate up the ship into a bunch of smaller ships, because some people wanted to leave. They didn't want to be in this generational ship anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't as big of a deal until that whole thing became known, was what it was, because, hey, good job on your phone, Oren.
Yeah, hold on.
Well, you know, we're just kind of doing it live, but you know.
That's just Comcast calling me to remind me for like the third time today that I have an appointment tomorrow. Because apparently, in order for me to keep the current price that I have, I need to get free television, which I don't really want. But
you need to get free television in order to keep the price that you have.
Yeah, because my special deal ran out, and so the only way to stay at the price that I have
introductory thing?
Yeah, the only way to keep the price is to do another special deal, and the special deal that's available gives me free television, and I don't want television,
so
but
some guy's gonna come put a bunch of cable jacks all over your house then.
Or one, preferably.
Or one.
but anyway, they're just hoping that I'll get so attached to television that at the end of the 6 months I'll be willing to pay more for it.
But Netflix.
Yeah, I know. I didn't stop paying for television because it was too expensive. I stopped because it was boring. But anyway, sorry.
It doesn't match my time schedule at all.
Yeah.
Anyway, so they wanted to leave, you know, this generational ship.
Yeah.
I think it's the Voth. I think their name is the Voth. I may be wrong on that, though.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, it kind of escalated a little more. I mean, it was already kind of like serious business before, but it just became more serious, the fact that Kim was involved with this woman who was considered like this separatist individual, you know, so.
But like, that wasn't the reason why Janeway decided to bust him up about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was something that came up later. Basically, this was the episode where I guess the writers had never seen an episode of the original series, and I'm fairly certain, and like, you know,
that Janeway, was a Kirk alien sex joke for those that aren't paying attention.
Yeah, and actually, Janeway has totally had sexual relations with an alien. Like, this is a thing that Janeway did. I don't know if she'd done it by that point in the show. I looked this up. I forget the name of the alien, but there's an alien that Janeway totally sleeps with. There's like, and I think it's later in the show, so it might not actually have happened by that episode, but it's still really like, you know, it's just so silly that Janeway would put a black mark on his record.
Who did she sleep with?
I don't remember his name, but I looked it up. It's on Memory Alpha.
There's only one that I recall where she was on the cusp of having intimate relations with, and that's where they're traveling through this Empire space where, being like a telepath is like illegal.
That might be the guy. Maybe she didn't actually sleep with him, but
she didn't sleep with him. They shared a passionate kiss towards the end of the episode before the big reveal that, oh man, he's not actually trying to defect or anything like that. He's actually still working for the bad guys.
Yeah. I don't remember exactly, but I know that she has pursued relationships with other species before.
And a hologram. Thank you.
So
I just got through all the Fairhaven
stuff. The fact that she came down so hard on Kim for something that at no other point in Star Trek has ever been indicated was actually forbidden is just so dumb. And it just highlights Janeway being a terrible leader. And of course, we see in the episode that because she's punishing him so unreasonably, Kim just decides, you know, to hell with orders. Like, you know, she's being so unreasonable that it doesn't matter.
What's the worst she's going to do, right?
Yeah,
which is kind of the question he raises. It's like, well, what else are you going to do to me? I'm already an ensign. I can't go any lower in rank, which isn't true, actually, because we see the Equinox crew that's folded into Voyager.
He could get busted down to crewman, but really, well, how would that change his life? I mean, what would he be doing that he doesn't already do?
Yeah.
At that point, the worst thing that could happen is that she would demote him to crewman and he wouldn't be on the bridge anymore, which would be great, because he would be farther away from Janeway. But all right,
like a win-win, Kim. You just need to stay the course, pal. Stay the course.
I know. All right, so moving off of that topic, we're talking about Voyager and how they have a lot of plots where the plot of the episode is, will Voyager get home this episode? Because they're always discovering like shortcuts. Because Voyager is basically Lost in Space, and that was one of the things that Lost in Space liked to do.
Minus Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
Or at least from the new, well, newish, new, well, newer of the Lost in Space
movie. Yeah, that movie was so weird. I watched that movie, and at first I kind of enjoyed it, and then I realized this movie is very strange. I don't understand what's happening in this movie. But anyway, like, the first time this and the whole nature of the Lost in Space story is that they get to see new and weird things that, like, none of the other ships have ever run, none of the other Star Trek characters have ever run into because they're so far out, and they have, like, they're going to have shortages because they're far from home, which they never actually do. But, you know, the idea being that they're in a, you know, desperate situation, and they're going to encounter new things in the face of it while trying to reach their home.
Right.
Which, of course, means that the entire drama of the show is hinged on the fact that they can't get home quickly.
Right.
So we know that they're not going to get home in these early episodes because that would mean the show would be over. So that's the big problem right there is that the first time any of these episodes come up where they get like a, you know, we're going to get home story is they're immediately, like all the drama is sucked out if you even kind of understand what the show is about. And the first time that happens is Eye of the Needle.
Like seven episodes in.
Yeah, like it's episode 7 of season 1, and they find this wormhole that leads back to the Alpha Quadrant. It's like a micro wormhole.
Yes, very tiny.
And they can't fit Voyager through it, but it turns out that they can totally transport through it eventually. And it's like, will we get home? And that episode does get some bonus points because it portrays a Romulan as not an asshole, because there's a Romulan ship on the other side of the wormhole, and it's like this Romulan who isn't being a huge jerk, which I like. I mean, I'm always...
Well, he was at first.
Well, I mean, he didn't trust them at first.
Yeah, but for good reason as well.
Yeah, and then, like, once they actually talked about it, once they actually figured out what was going on, he was like, oh, okay, well, you know, I don't have any direct interest in not helping you, so I'll help you if I can.
Yeah, why not? We sympathize because he also had, like, a wife and child or whatnot, which he hadn't seen yet back on
the list. He also had loved ones.
That he was far away from.
Which is fortunate that the wormhole didn't come out next to the Romulan who had no one he cared about. He would not sympathize with them. But, like, as you can see, in the end, the reason they can't do it is because it's a time wormhole as well as a space wormhole, so they'd be going back, like, 20 years in the wrong direction.
Yep.
And so, like, they eventually end up not doing it for that reason. But, really, I think it would have been better for them to just not have ever brought up that they could have transported through it. Like, because they introduced an artificial solution, and then they had to create an artificial reason why it wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
That had nothing to do with any of the characters or anything that they did.
Yeah, that's actually exactly how I felt when I was watching the episode.
Because it's like, you know, it's like, Taurus is like, hey, maybe we could transport through this. And you're like, well, I don't think that's going
to
happen.
If I turn this dial to the left, the probe that's wedged in the wormhole will be able to act as a relay between us and the Romulan ship and the thing.
Uh-huh.
We'll transport.
And so, like, you know, really, and then, of course, at the end, they just had him die, and the Romulan, like, he died before delivering their messages.
Yeah.
And, like, they never brought him up later, even though it would have been perfect. Mm-hmm. They had a perfect, like, excuse for some episode-to-episode continuity. No, never brought that up.
Nope.
So the entire episode just felt pointless,
mm-hmm.
because we didn't really learn anything. The only character who got any real development was the Romulan guest star, who we never saw again. And it was just like, you know, it was like, what? Why?
Yeah.
Those episodes that are, like, about the guest star are really silly if the guest star is never going to come back.
Yep.
Like, the Amanda Rogers was like that in The Next Generation. He had this episode about Amanda Rogers, who was this new character who we never saw again. And it was like, why did we have this episode about her?
Where was she during the Q Civil War?
Yeah, I know, right? Where was she? The Q Civil War is stupid for any number of reasons.
Some of which we've mentioned.
Yeah, we have. Which we'll probably talk about a little bit more later.
Because that's what's going to come up.
Because, you know, I can't get through an entire Voyager episode without referencing the Q Civil War.
If that's true. I'm going to go back and listen to all our episodes and see
if I don't ever... It's probably
one. Anytime Voyager comes up, Q in the Gray.
There's one or two when I was tired. But anyway, so after Eye of the Needle, we have Prime Factors, which is three episodes later.
Three whole episodes later.
Three entire episodes later, and they already have another way home. And Prime Factors is a little bit better, because Prime Factors is primarily about, like, is one of the first episodes where they really have to test their whole Federation ideals versus practicality, and we get to see Janeway in a not-I-know-everything mode. Like, mm-hmm. Janeway is genuinely unsure what the right thing to do is.
Now, what's the piece of technology, or what's the MacGuffin thing?
Okay, the MacGuffin for that episode is that the alien race that they're stopping and talking with, which for once does not have some kind of crazy sinister plan, is they have this like transporter that can transport like entire ships, like a huge distance.
Like a bajillion light years or something like that.
Yeah, like a bazillion light years.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't want to give it away because they don't like trading away their super technology, which is, you know, I can understand that.
Well, it's like their own version of the Prime Directive.
Yeah, basically. Right? Well, I don't remember exactly how they justified it. I just know that if I had a transporter that can do that, I would not hand it out to people.
They're like hospitality spirits, like from Mage, if I recall right. Like, yeah, they just want to make you so happy, and they want you to stay and be happy.
Kind of. Yeah, they were very friendly.
And then they weren't willing to give the technology because they were afraid that, you know, if it went into anyone else's hands but their own, it'd be twisted and perverted into, like, weapon stuff, and oh my gosh, we don't want that to happen.
And considering who the people who live around them, I can understand that fear. I certainly wouldn't want, like, the Vidians to get a hold of that stuff.
Oh, my goodness.
And transport away all your organs.
Ooh, no organs for you.
But then they have the option of trading for it on the black market.
Yep.
And, like, you know, they have...
In exchange for library books.
Yeah, in exchange for their fairy tale stories.
Yep.
All right, so, I mean, I don't know. The last time I went and offered to trade, like, Aesop's Tales for a new muffler, the mechanic didn't really buy it. but, you know, these guys have different priorities.
Oh, yeah.
And that's actually the first... Janeway is kind of trying to seduce the guy in order to he'll give them the technology. So it's not really, but it's kind of, it's like a quasi-seduction. It kind of feeds into what we were talking earlier about Janeway being so mean to Kim for no reason.
Yep.
About interspecies relations.
Mm-hmm.
But that episode, you know, kind of works out. Tuvok gets a little bit of character development in that episode, because he's like, you know, I'm going to do this thing.
Tuvok's got no problem giving nasty thoughts to people.
Say what now?
Well, remember, because if I'm thinking of the right race...
What are we talking about now?
No, that's a totally different episode. I'm sorry. I was thinking of an episode. For some reason, I mashed the two together. They go to some planet where they're training for stuff, and the entire race is telepathic.
Mm-hmm.
And but no one has like any dark or violent thoughts of any sort.
Oh dear.
Yeah. So they stumble as this episode progresses. They stumble upon like this black market of like thought. This like thought black market is what it is.
Oh right.
Where you can trade and buy like violent memories, and you kind of get like a bit of a high off it or whatever.
There was a Doctor Who episode kind of like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a. I forget what the name of the episode was, but it was the one where they were all like trapped in this like underground like highway full of cars of people trying to get to the surface, and the surface was where like the rich elite lived. And they like the people had these patches where you could feel very specific emotions.
This is David Tennant Doctor Who, right?
Yeah,
yeah, I know what episode that is. There was no telepathic stuff though.
No, but it's kind of similar. Buying feelings was the idea.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And then when they got to the surface, it turned out everyone on the surface had died of bliss. Because they had all bought bliss and then just been blissful until they died.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, so back to Prime Factors. Tuvok is the one who eventually goes to make the trade. And like,
well, initially it was B'Elanna and two of her... B'Elanna, Seska, and someone else.
Was it Carrie? Who was the third conspirator?
I don't remember.
I know
this is five seasons
ago. And I don't think it was a Maquis. I think it was I think it was B'Elanna and Seska and then a Starfleet guy. Maybe it was Carrie. I don't know.
Maybe.
But whoever, you know, they originally decided to do it, and then Tuvok shows up and is like, "No, guys, I got this.
It's cool. I got this, bro."
And I liked that because it was like Tuvok, and like Tuvok, the way Tuvok explains it to Janeway is he's like, "You know, you couldn't do that because you're the captain, but it was something that you had to do because it was best interest of your crew, so I did it for you."
Yep.
Which I liked, and I would have liked to see more of that. But, you know, if there's one thing Voyager hates, it's character development that continues past the end of the episode, so we never got to see any more of that stuff.
Yep.
And, you know, again, it was just, in the end, it doesn't work. They actually get the technology, but it doesn't function.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, oh, no, wow, it didn't work. What a surprise, right?
Yeah.
The show, we're still going to have a show next week.
It's just the reasoning behind it was so silly, too. Oh, it uses this type of energy. It'll never be compatible with Starfleet technology. It's like, really? That's the problem. It'll just never be compatible.
Well, remember, this is the guy. These are the guys who can't make the energy from their own holodecks work with the rest of the ship.
This is true.
It will. Incompetence
knows no bounds.
And then they end up like grafting a bunch of Borg stuff on.
Yeah.
Yeah. That whole.
This is not compatible with Starfleet technology. I'm not buying that for a second, B'Elanna. I think you're just lazy.
Yeah, I have to wonder if maybe B'Elanna is like. I always had to wonder if maybe B'Elanna had some kind of horrible, like, stuff going on that she didn't want to go back to, but she was trying to keep up appearances for the rest of her Maquis friends.
I'd rather just be in the Delta Quadrant, guys. It's cool.
The Delta Quadrant is a pretty happening town. Alright, so, I guess we find out about her mother. That kind of makes sense. She has, like, serious mom issues.
Yeah, just a little bit.
And then we had, after that, we had Cold Fire, which was the one where they met the female, caretaker, and that was primarily an episode about Kes, but they were kind of trying to get home in that episode, and of course it didn't end up happening.
Nope.
I wasn't entirely sure why, because, like, the lady changeling was convinced that they had killed her mate, and they eventually explained to her, no, we didn't, and I don't know why they didn't stick around and be like, hey, will you send us home? You know, I guess they were having some issues with the main Ocampa guy. Like, he was causing some trouble, but I got the feeling that was at the behest of the female caretaker, and once they explained to her what was going on, I feel like maybe she might have been more reasonable. But they didn't even really try. They were just like, okay, if you left and you were kind of miffed, let's not try to pursue this at all. Let's not push a little harder.
Really, the moment of that episode sticks out most in my mind is where the female caretaker is in engineering, and she's giving the spiel to Janeway and stuff, and then she somehow gets disabled, her powers are disabled somehow.
Well, because they made the anti-caretaker gun.
Yeah, and right when Janeway shoots her with the gun, the little girl playing that part has the best, like, fall over ever, because it's so obviously fake.
Hey, look.
Granted, it's a little girl. That's cool. That's fine. It's just so obvious that this is poorly acted, and the director or whatnot, probably, I don't know how many takes it took or whatnot, but I feel like they just took one take and just called it good.
Look, that's
really how I felt that went down.
That child actor spent a lot of time working on her facial technique and her, you know, and her emotions. No one ever told her she was going to have to do trust exercises on this episode, okay?
Oh, my goodness.
All right, now I need you to fall backwards. Wait, what? I spent most
of the time... Well, it's like she had very far to fall. She was, like, on her knees already.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh,
She was like on her knees, okay, like with the male caretaker remains and whatnot. And then she's like, you know, like mind screwing everybody. It's just like, just this really lame fall over, like, emote. It's just
maybe that's how caretakers fall over, Bob. You don't know.
You're right. I don't, but I really feel like I they can fall over better.
All right, and so after Cold Fire, technically the next Let's Get Home episode was Threshold.
Warp Factor Newt.
Which is really bad, and I don't really know if we want to get into Threshold here, because Threshold is like an entire episode. But Threshold has the distinction of being the only Let's Get Home episode with a method that actually worked, and then for some reason they chose not to use it.
Yep.
Because, because, like, if you remember... Like, sure, it turns you into newts, but they have a way, like, the doctor can reverse it really easily, off-screen in a log entry. So,
yep.
So it's like, you know, they could totally just use it to get home, but they don't.
They just don't.
For reasons that are never explained. Unfortunately, they
Check this. I mean, and I thought about this after I had seen the episode, you know, because I've been doing my March Through Voyager.
Oh, okay, all right.
You know, Paris jumps into the Delta Flyer, or no, just a shuttlecraft, excuse me, they didn't have the Delta Flyer yet.
No, they did not.
He jumps into a shuttlecraft with Janeway, does the whole Warp Factor 10 plus thing, Warp Factor Newt, and zooms away, and then Voyager spends, like, 3 days or something looking for him, right?
Yeah, it's a good thing they came out, like, 3 days away, and not, right? Like, not like, two universes away or something.
Right, because, you know, that episode's saying, you know, if you go Warp Factor 10, you're, like, everywhere all at once. You know, at the same time, right?
Uh-huh.
Is what Warp Factor 10 plus is supposed to do, which, you know, it doesn't.
Right.
Right, so it's like, it's just, wow, alright, I guess they're just 3 days away, that's cool.
That's convenient.
How do you plot a course like that at Warp 10?
Well, I mean...
If I'm everywhere at the same time...
We're getting dangerously close to talking about Threshold for real now. There's so much going on in that episode. I'm just going to move on before we use up all of our time.
How do you plot a course? I don't understand.
No, no more threshold. Threshold, leave this place. So next we have False Prophets.
Yes.
Oh my goodness, False Prophets. Okay, so that's with the... this is the episode that has one of the few Voyager continuity episodes. If you remember back in TNG...
From TNG, of all places.
Yeah, where we had The Price. Yep. Where some
also season 3 of TNG.
Yeah, funny.
As we're in season 3 right now of Voyager.
Yeah, season 3, episode 5. And in The Price, some Ferengi went through the Barzan wormhole into the Delta Quadrant and got stuck there when it collapsed. Or when it started shifting around.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I was actually kind of wondering when I first started watching Voyager if they were going to bring that up. And then they did in, like, the stupidest possible way that they could ever have done it. And that episode, really, the only reason that they didn't get home in that episode is because the writers were, like, bending over backwards trying to figure out a way to make this whole... the Ferengi are exploiting a primitive culture story into a challenging conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Because for some reason, they just weren't willing to just beam them away because the Ferengi spun this bullshit about how it would be damaging to their culture. But we see how the people react when the Ferengi leave. They're not upset. They're thrilled.
They are. They are cheering in the streets.
It's like, so, you know, I guess Janeway's just really gullible or something. So for some reason, they are not... So they aren't willing to just beam the Ferengi away and leave, at which point they could have just gone through the wormhole and been home. No, they're not willing.
They have this very intricate plan about setting up stuff about the tales and legends of the planet and how these two prophet god figures, which are the Ferengi, are going to leave at that point.
Right, well, yeah, because I guess the premise, in case anyone hasn't seen the episode, the premise of this episode is that the Ferengi from The Price have basically set themselves up as the god rulers of this primitive planet, because they have a replicator, which is magic.
Yep.
Like, you know, not just, like, advanced technology, just actually magic, basically. I mean, we've already talked about replicators.
Yes, we have.
But you know, so when they try to beam the Frank... And it's actually, this episode is kind of funny, because as it's been pointed out before, the Prime Directive technically states that they should just leave this alone, because this isn't any of their business. But for some reason, Janeway decides to get involved... Mm-hmm. Because today she's willing to bend the Prime Directive, but not to save a bunch of people in time and again. No, sir.
Nope.
No. So after their whole, like, we're just going to beam you away, and then being told, you can't do that, it'll cause cultural damage to these people. And,
no, bro.
You know, buying that line for some reason. Then, instead of, they decide that their plan is they have to force the Ferengi to make it seem like they're leaving of their own free will. So instead of just intimidating them into doing it, which would have been the simplest plan, just beaming down with a security team, pointing phasers at them and saying, all right, you guys are going to go out there and you're going to tell them that you're leaving or we're going to start shooting you with phasers. Because, I mean, you know, Janeway can be pretty intimidating when she puts her mind to it. Mm-hmm. I bet she could totally have sold that line.
Yep.
But no, they don't do that. No, instead they concoct this, like, really complicated scheme to have Neelix pose as a messenger from Ferenginar telling them to leave, but, like, telling them to do all these things that don't make sense for a Ferengi, so they get really suspicious.
The rules of acquisition were rewritten when you were gone.
Yep, and, like, saying, now you have to thank them, and it's just, and like, of course, they figure out something's up, and they attack Neelix, and Neelix folds like a house of cards.
Yep.
Checkmate. And he explains the whole thing, so now they have even less time, and honestly, and then they finally get around to their actual plan that works, which is convincing the natives that it's time for the gods to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And then they decide to burn them. And the natives decide to burn them, and they have to get beamed away at the last minute.
Yep.
And because of all this nonsense, they miss the wormhole.
Yep, but the Ferengi get through.
But the Ferengi get through okay. And it's just like, you know, if at any point during that whole list of failures they had picked a plan that would actually work... Like, I mean, heck, they've shown us that they can do really complicated surgery. Why not just stun both of the Ferengi, then make Neelix look like one of them? And then be like, hey guys, I'm totally that Ferengi god of yours, we're leaving, be cool. No, they don't do anything like that. And as a result, they miss the wormhole, and it's just... It is so painful to watch as they're just like, you could just leave now. You could just leave. Nope. You're not gonna. Nope. You could leave. Not gonna leave. Okay.
Nope. Out.
At the very least, I feel like they should have sent Voyager through and, like, had Janeway and, like, maybe, you know, a couple of volunteers stay behind in a shuttle if they were just that you know, if Janeway was just that dedicated to getting rid of the Ferengi, I feel she still had a duty to her crew. So it's, you know, that episode is just so absurd for so many reasons. And then the next one we have isn't for a while. It's in season four, Hope and Fear, which is the one with the what's it called, the Dauntless.
Yes.
Yeah. Basically,
the squid ship.
Yeah. Like a while back, they had gotten like a communication from Starfleet, but they couldn't, like, they hadn't been able to decode it.
Which I really actually like this episode a lot.
Do you?
Yes.
All right.
Because, and I think I actually mentioned this to you after I had watched the episode, and I came over for. When we were going to play our Star Trek RPG, or it was something else. Maybe it was at work when I mentioned it to you, that this guy, this was after the Borg Alliance deal, right?
Yeah, it was.
After Scorpion and such. And it was all about showing to Janeway that, look, while you're going around making these deals with the Borg, you actually kind of screwed over not only this race, but perhaps several others with the nanoprobe thing. And this guy was all about, yeah, I'm going to go find Janeway and then make her deal with her shit.
I'm going to go ruin her. So the premise is that, like, they think they've decoded Starfleet's message, and they think it's telling them to go to this alien guy on this new ship that Starfleet has sent. But it turns out it's totally a lie, and that the ship is supposed to get them home with slipstream technology. But it turns out that the alien guy just wants to send them to the Borg because of their deal with Species 8472. With the Borg, about Species 8472, the Borg assimilated his people.
Yep.
And we find out later that Species 8472 are actually perfectly nice people, and are not evil in any way, and so Janeway's entire plan is even stupider.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I already knew it was kind of stupid, and I'll talk about it in the flesh in a minute here. So again, it's this thing where it's like, oh man, are they going to get home? Who knows?
Ooh.
And of course they don't. At least that episode manages to have like some conflict, and like the villain is a little more interesting than the Ferengi because he's got an actual reason for what he's doing.
He's got great motivation.
Yeah.
Again, this is a good example of the guest star getting some awesome development.
Yeah, but then the guest star ends up getting more development than any of the actual characters.
He's flying his ship, which the navigation controls are destroyed. Right. Mm-hmm. He destroys them, so no one has a chance to get off the ship and whatnot. You know, he just gets swarmed by three Borg cubes, and he's sitting in his chair like, oh, well, I guess I'm done.
Yeah, that's a pretty good scene where he's just sitting very calmly in his chair as the Borg, you will be assimilated message plays over the speakers. Yep. Although, God, I hate the idea of the Borg with slipstream. That sounds dangerous.
Well, they've already got transwarp.
Right, but their transwarp are like roads. Like, they need to build transwarp conduits. They can't just go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas slipstream literally lets you go anywhere. So I'm not entirely sure why we don't see a bunch of Borg ships slipstreaming everywhere.
They're busy assimilating the technology still.
I guess that technology takes a while to unravel. Although they had a pretty cool follow-up to that episode. I can't remember what it was called, but it was the one that's like, it's basically set like 20 years in Voyager's future, where like it turns out that Voyager tried to use the slipstream to get home,
and
they were all destroyed except for Harry and Chakotay, who were out in front on a shuttlecraft.
Yep.
And it's all about them trying to change the past. That's when we get to see. That's when we get to see Geordi as captain of the Challenger, and just adding to the list of Starfleet characters who eventually become captains,
no matter where they were.
But you know, I'd say Geordi makes more sense on that list than Crusher. I think Geordi was already in like a fairly good leadership position.
Yeah, he was chief engineer.
I could see Geordi in captain.
Well, remember,
of
Crusher was in charge of a medical frigate.
Yeah, but being a medical ship, being a doctor doesn't make you prepared to be in charge of a medical ship. I mean, being a doctor is a very specific skill set. Captaining a ship, even if it has other doctors on it, doesn't actually line up with those. But we're not talking about Crusher right now. We already did this. Hope and Fear is actually a good episode in that it shows us some consequences of what Janeway did, although it makes Janeway look even dumber.
Yep.
We get a cool new character. The Dauntless was pretty cool. I was sad that, like, that didn't come up again all that often, except for that one follow-up episode, where, again, there wasn't really a whole lot of character development beyond, like, because future Harry and future Chakotay got some development, but that was all undone.
Mm-hmm.
And none of the characters from the actual story got any of that development. So it was, you know, Voyager was just really fond of its reset buttons. And sometimes
the Year of Hell comes to mind.
Oh, yeah, the Year of Hell. We should have an episode about the Year of Hell.
Just a whole episode about Year of Hell.
Oh, goodness, Year of Hell. Yeah, that
it's, episode. It's not actually a bad two-parter.
No, it's like not. It. It's pretty good. It was supposed to be an entire season. I think I've mentioned that before.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right, so then, so that, I think that was about the end of the really bad Let's Get Home episodes. Because
there's another one that was kind of a false expectation one.
Oh, really? Which one was it?
I don't remember the name of it, but they encounter... Well, it starts off with 709 has built up like this secondary cortical processor thingamajig, so she can process more data.
Oh dear!
At the end of the day, when she goes into her regen alcove thingamajig,
that doesn't sound like a good idea.
Now, after the credits roll, well, I guess at the opening credits, they encounter this dude who's hanging out in space with this strange catapult apparatus, and he's got this tetrion reactor and some such. He's like, yeah, I built this like catapult thing instead of trying to fly towards space, my home for 10 years. I'm going to build this catapult and make the distance in 2 hours. And Janeway's like, yay, I'd love to use this catapult. What do you need to make it work? And they strike a deal and whatnot. I think it ends up flinging them like 5,000 light years or something like that.
Doesn't that actually work?
Yeah, it does. It doesn't get them like all the way home.
Right.
But as the episode keeps going, and 709 starts using her cortical processor thing that she built, the secondary one.
Yeah.
She starts coming up with all these weird conspiracy plots.
Oh,
about,
right.
Like, how Janeway's, in fact, like, an advanced, like, Federation scout for, like, some sort of territorial conquest of the Federation plans or the Delta Quadrant.
Right.
Then, like, probably tells Chakotay about it. And then, on the reverse, then Janeway's all telling, or, 709's telling Janeway at that point, like, yeah, Chakotay's totally... like, going to get the Maquis all up in here and launch attacks with the catapult against Cardassian targets and such. Huh. It's like, well, hang on, guys. Hold on. There's a big glaring problem with this thing. At most, it's going to fling you 5,000 light years. You're still, like, 70,000 light years away from home. Let's put that in perspective for a second, guys. Like, there's no way the Federation can send reinforcements through this thing. Assuming, for a second, let's give 709 the benefit of the doubt and say that she was right. How is something that can at most fling something 5,000 light years going to bring in Federation reinforcements or launch attacks against Cardassia?
Look, I feel like if 7 of 9 is so far gone that she's coming up with this kind of conspiracy theory, it's a much smaller leap for her to make the theory that somehow this catapult is capable of much more than she thinks it is. Of course, the real lesson of that episode is never let 7 of 9 build anything. So the stuff 7 of 9 builds is always getting them into trouble.
Mm-hmm. Season 6, there's a lot of 7 of 9 stuff, which is, I'm in season 6
well,
right
everything
now.
After 7 of 9. The show is just basically about 7 of 9 after she gets introduced, because, like, I mean, they introduced 7 of 9, and it was like, oh, look, tits. And then, because, I guess, they decided to attach, like, a good character to those tits. And I do enjoy 7 of 9's character. I think she's one of the better ones on the show, but it still annoys me how they basically just, rather than fixing the show they already had and, like, trying to make the other characters more interesting, they're just like, oh, here's a new one. All right, we're gonna love this character now. And, like, I've heard, and I think I've probably talked about this before, but it bears repeating, according to certain sources, Kate Mulgrew really, really didn't like the 7 of 9 character and was, like, really upset about it. And I can totally understand why.
I've never heard this.
This was from an interview with Garrett Wong, the actor who plays Harry Kim.
Uh-huh.
And he was talking about how Kate Mulgrew really didn't like the 7 of 9 character.
The character, not the actor.
Well, according to him, some of her dislike of the character translated into hostility towards the actress. And I have no idea if that's true.
I had this image of Kate Mulgrew just, like, shouting at Jerry Ryan.
I've also heard from other sources that Jerry Ryan is just really fed up with Star Trek, which I can totally understand, because 7 of 9...
Well, I know Jerry Ryan was initially opposed to playing 7 of 9 for... the reason because it was going to just be tits on the show.
Yeah, well...
But then she, like, read more into the character and thought, oh yeah, this is actually going to be a cool character I could play. And there's actually stuff here I can do as an actor.
Yeah, but I mean, I can totally understand why she would be really, really frustrated with Star Trek fandom. Because if you can imagine the kind of people that she's likely to meet, with, like, you know, at cons, a lot of them are going to be the people who...
Well, she totally goes to cons.
Yeah.
And, like, signs stuff.
She does.
I don't know if she speaks or anything like that, like Patrick Stewart or William Shatner does, but...
Despite the fact that 7 of 9 is a cool character, she definitely brings out some of the less desirable elements in Star Trek fandom, into the people who are just obsessed with her because of her costume.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not really... If I was a celebrity, that is not the kind of person I would want to talk to at a convention.
No, probably not. I wouldn't either.
But anyway, what I was saying about Kate Mulgrew was that, the whole point of Voyager was that it was going to have a female captain, it was going to be very progressive... And then to save, not to save the show, because the show wasn't in any danger of being canceled at that point, but to boost interest in the show, they brought on this big-titted woman in cat suit and made the show all about her. Like, if you look, Janeway doesn't really have any episodes after Seven of Nine is introduced, except the ones where she is a mentor or a mother figure to Seven.
Yep.
Like, she no longer has her own stories after that. And for that matter, neither most of the other characters. Like, about the most interesting thing any of the other characters did after Seven of Nine was introduced was the Torres-Paris romance. Which, you know, I actually liked. I liked that romance. I thought it was cool.
I thought it progresses. I think it progresses very well from what I've seen so far. But I don't. I feel it came out of left field when it was first introduced, though.
Oh yeah, you mean the one where they're trapped in the shuttle? Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
It was a little sudden.
I love you, Tom. I've always loved you. It's like, oh, okay, all right. That's cool.
All right, so we've gotten a bit off track, which is what happens whenever I bring up Seven of Nine, because I have very strong feelings about this character. But as I was saying, the Hope and Fear is basically the last stupid Let's Get Home episode of Voyager, because after that point, it was late enough in the show where they had a couple of other Let's Get Home episodes, but it was late enough that there was the possibility that they might actually get home.
Uh-huh.
And so it was way less, like, you know, we know that they're not going to get home.
Right.
And so it had less of that. And that actually brings me to what I think that they should have done to make this more interesting is, first of all, take all those Let's Get Home plots and replace them with sort of like a catapult episode, where they have a thing that can get them, that can, like, shave 10 years off their journey, but not get them all the way home. Because at that point, they can actually succeed every once in a while.
So just failure without after it failure ending, after you know, failure.
this is the old premise that your villain really needs to have an objective other than to kill your main character. Because in shows where the villain is just trying to kill the main character, he can never succeed, and that's boring.
Right.
So it's the same thing. And they really, like, that, you know, it would be more drama that way. And I also feel like Voyager really should have gotten home much earlier than they did. I feel like the show would have been way more interesting if they'd gotten home at the end of the sixth season, and then the seventh season could have been about, like, them adjusting.
I think that's actually something we've mentioned on the show before.
Yeah,
you mentioned.
We totally have.
Where that last season would be them acclimating to life back in the Alpha Quadrant,
yeah,
back
and,
home,
and then
the familiar, as opposed to in the Delta Quadrant, where, oh my gosh, everything is different.
And they could even, and they could work in how much things have changed. They could, like, work
heck yeah,
in,
post-Dominion War?
Yeah. They could work in, like, you know, elements from the Delta, like something from the Delta Quadrant showing up in the Alpha Quadrant and then having to deal with it.
Oh man, I would love to see the justification for making Janeway an admiral.
Yeah, that could have been interesting. Like, you know, maybe,
like, if I was the guy reading the mission reports and the logs and whatnot from those 7 years, that, or, well, mm-hmm, six if they made,
yeah,
it home at the end of sixth season, I wouldn't have made her an admiral.
I don't know.
I would definitely have taken her off starship duty, but not an admiral.
No, sir. Like, I mean,
like,
I
would
just
have asked her for maybe, you know, voluntary resignation.
Yeah, and I mean, like, they
and
could,
then escalated from there if necessary.
I think it would have been really interesting to have, like, something follow them back from the Delta Quadrant.
That's not Borg.
That isn't the Borg. And
Kazon,
they would have
around the Alpha Quadrant.
Oh goodness, not the Kazon. I mean, a lot of this hinges
the
on Vidians? The show. A lot of this hinges on the show being better written in the first place. But if they had, like, you know, bring some kind of problem from the Delta Quadrant with them, and they're the only ones who know how to deal with it all of a sudden. And so they become, like, the premier, like, the, you know, the main ship of the Federation that's dealing with it. Or something like that. I think they could have done something much more interesting than they did, where at the end of Voyager, we just see Voyager, like, heading towards Earth. We don't see any actual, like, follow-up.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing feels kind of hollow. So that's, I would have really liked to see a much, a more... I don't know, thought-out approach to the Let's Get Home stories, as opposed to, and the reason they did it the way they did was because it was just a really cheap way to make sure that the characters cared about the plot,
because
that way they didn't have to come up with a more compelling reason. They could just have it be, oh, they're going to get home. Well, everyone on the ship wants to get home, right?
Yep.
I mean, frankly, I think it would have been way more interesting if they'd had a couple of episodes where there was a division on the crew about whether they actually wanted to go home, especially with the Maquis learning that, like, everyone they knew was dead, and, like, that it was basically the Federation's fault. Like, I mean, I could totally have seen a couple episodes dealing where they could have brought back up the tension between the Federation, between the Starfleet officers and the Maquis, and had it be, like, an actual, like, you know, a division in the crew. But, of course, because this was you know, later Star Trek, the whole idea of a division in the crew was completely out the window. DS9 was really the only people who ever really investigated that. You're making funny faces at me, Bob.
I am, because I'm not really sure that whole division of the crew thing would fit very well, myself personally, because everyone wants to get home. I'm struggling to try to find a reason why they wouldn't want to get home.
Well, I just told you.
Or some of the crew.
I mean, the reason why that...
I mean, the whole Maquis thing, all their friends are dead and such, but I mean...
Their friends are dead.
Why would they not want to get home just because of that, though?
Well, they don't have a home to go back to, and there's a very good chance that they will all be arrested as soon as they get home, because they're still criminals.
It's true, they are.
And, like, you know... I don't think the Federation operates on the principle of karmic balance, where if you do enough good things, it outweighs the bad things that you've done.
I'm pretty confident that's how it ended, though.
I mean, probably. but I don't know. I think that would have been interesting. Or have them, like, have some kind of, like, you know, post-Dominion War, maybe have the Federation... What would have been really interesting is if they'd come back and the Federation had become some kind of authoritarian autocracy... Because of the Dominion War. That would have been really cool. And have them have to deal with that. I don't know.
That's a very strange shift, but alright.
I could totally see that happening.
So could I, but I mean, that it doesn't fall in line with what like the Federation of Starfleet is all about, though.
Well, no, that's why they would
I mean, there are certainly people who want that sort of change, that's for sure. I mean, DS9 episodes Homefront and Paradise Lost are both good examples of that.
And I mean, heck, just Section 31 in general. The Dominion War is really the biggest...
No, I don't think Section 31.
You don't think so?
I don't think so. I think they're... The way Section 31... This is actually way off topic now. Section 31 is more kind of like... you remember the movie Serenity, right?
Yeah.
They're the agent at near the kind of the last third of the movie is talking about how he's there to make sure that a perfect world exists and all that good stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he's never going to live there.
Right.
That's very much the comparison I would make with Section 31, is that they very much want to have that perfect world, paradise, exist. Not necessarily like in like an autocratic sort of way, but how it is now.
Alright, well that's fair.
But they're never going to be there and live there and enjoy it. They're just going to protect it.
See, I feel like with Section
31... In every way they can.
I feel like they say that, but I feel like when you have a group of people willing to employ the methods that they use... I don't think that you can, you know, I what I'm saying is that I don't think you can murder a puppy with one hand and, like, save a drowning kid with the other. I think that you're gonna, if you have a group of people that employs that sort of methodology that is so ruthless, that I don't think that they're gonna, if they actually, like, gained a lot of power, which it seems like they did during the Dominion War, because suddenly everyone needed them and suddenly a bunch of admirals were in bed with them, I don't think that they would just suddenly at the end of it be like, oh, okay, well... The threat's gone, let's all live happily and be in a free society again. I think that because the whole idea of Section 31 is based on secrecy and ends justifying the means, I have a feeling that if you put that kind of people in power, they would eventually, they would corrupt themselves.
You know, let's talk about intelligence services next episode.
Good idea, Star Trek intelligence services. Yeah. That's our plot for next episode. Moving back to our original theme. Now that we're done with the Let's Get Home stories, I want to talk briefly about the episodes where they could have gotten home and didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And my first example of
one, that's all the ones we just mentioned.
Yeah, a bunch of them. but, like, this is ones where they just ignored an obvious opportunity, like, In the Flesh.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the episode where they find Species 8472, like, prepping for an invasion of Starfleet.
Yep.
By, like, making a fake Starfleet Academy. And in the end, they eventually work out their differences, and they explained to Species 8472 that they thought that...
Well, sort of. They I mean, Janeway and crew explained themselves and what Starfleet and the Federation are kind of all about.
Right.
And how they don't want to fight with 8472.
Right, and they agree to...
And 8472 kind of takes the information and is like, yeah, we'll think about it.
Well, they agree to give they agree to give 8472 their nano torpedoes.
Mm-hmm.
And I really feel like at that point they could have pushed and been like, hey, 8472, you want to be allies against the Borg? Let's take us home. You know, we hate the Borg. How about we be partners? And we have a lot of anti-Borg stuff. And in response, and in return, you can take us home. Because we know Species 8472 could have done that, because obviously they had a way of reaching Earth, or this whole thing would have been moot.
Right.
And for some reason they don't. They don't do that. And then we have the same thing with the... with the Q in the Gray and the Q Civil War, where they basically fix the Q Civil War's problem and then don't ask to be sent home.
Yep.
No, sir. All right, so can we? What else? Can we think of any other examples where they could, other than the first episode, they of course could have gotten home there pretty easily.
Other than the stuff we just mentioned, there's nothing else that comes to mind. Now, mind you, I haven't made it all the way through Voyager yet.
I'm actually finding out there are a lot of Voyager episodes I never saw. I'm considering going through and watching them, but I have a limited constitution, and I'm very tired. So I don't really know.
This is true. All right, so I think that's actually it for now.
Yeah, I think we had a shorter podcast today, but that's good. I'm really tired. So, all right, next week we'll be talking about...
The intelligence services. IntelliJAR, Obsidian Order, Section 31...
We're talking about Klingon intelligence. They don't have a name, but we know they exist.
I wonder where sort of like strange little nook of the internet we can go to find that stuff.
All right, and we are totally going to post this episode at some point. I know it's been a while since we've updated, and we apologize for that.
I like how you're saying that, even though it's going to get posted at that point, and then
don't worry,
people are going to hear that and go, huh?
They'll know what I'm talking about. All right, this is All Things Trek signing off.